Well, welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, to the Dawn and Wind Show. And today we have, of course, my trusted co-host and one of my dearest friends, Wynn Free. And we have a really exciting show today, don't we, Wynn?
I don't know if it's exciting until it's over.
Well,
how do you know it's going to be exciting?
That's true. That's true.
We have a really interesting guest.
I'm not excited yet until I start talking with our guest. You know, this, Wynn, we had a lot of conversations this week, didn't we?
Did we?
But hasn't it gone down? It's gone down. Remember we used to have conversations several hours a day?
Yeah, well, that's only when you had one show a day.
Right. Well, we got to get back to that, Wynn.
Well,
I miss that because between you and I, when we used to call in the light together and talk an hour or two every day together, I felt great. I felt alive. And now I'm so distanced from it all because I'm doing so much, trying to work so hard that I miss that with you. I'd like to get that back. So you got to start calling me more.
Well, usually you're too busy to talk.
I know, but I got to start making time for it because I really do miss it.
So listen, Don, you've made some changes in Brogan. You've got Nevin there, right?
I have Nevin here. The whole team's here. We've got...
You know, for those people that are tuning in for the first time, Don Newsom is the founder of Brogan Service, and he started out in his little apartment in Texas, and now he's moved to California, and for the longest period of time, he was doing everything himself, probably working 17 hours a day, right? And now, one of his great shows, Nevin Campanelli, is actually acting in kind of an administrative function for Brogan Service. And helping Don, and he's coughing in the background.
Yeah, he's hurting. He's hurting. Now he's giving me the... What is that? Oh, wait, he's signaling to me. Signaling to me. That's we now have a full room from the studio, folks, so whenever one of us is on the radio, the other guys in the office are always chatting away, and that's you know, the way a studio works. And if you know, one of the fun parts of it and challenges are when everybody comes down, the kids come down, and the wife comes down, and everybody else, and then we've got guests over, and the studio's really full, and we try to get on the air. Then it's really exciting because we got a lot of commotion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. Is Doug in the background also, Don?
Yes, Doug's actually working away on the archives, and we're just uploading, and it'll be a while.
All right.
Okay. So how's your week been?
My week?
Yeah. No, wait. Let's talk about something really important today. Let's talk about you for a minute. How have you been doing?
Look,
have you been doing good?
You never answer
that question.
Last week I talked about
Watch,
me.
He'll avoid it. He's like a politician. He'll avoid that question.
Last week I talked about me for the entire show, and at the end, your mother was mad. You were mad. I talked about some of the channelings that we were doing.
I wasn't mad. My mom wasn't mad.
I know she wasn't.
I wasn't mad.
Your mom sent me an email, and she said, that I miss being close to Don because there's no one to fix my computer, so I can't listen to you guys like I used to.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did.
Yeah, so...
I hope she's listening now, but, you know, her computer might not be working.
She's your biggest fan.
She is. It's my mom. She's our biggest fan.
Well, I'm just along for the ride. You're her son.
True, and you'd be a little too short to be her son anyways.
That's right. All right. But we have Michael Sharp on tonight, and actually I am really looking forward to talking to Michael.
Yeah,
I have questions. I've been...
I read his books. I love him.
Percolating today some really interesting questions. But Michael is in Canada, Michael, are you there?
I'm here. I'm listening.
Are we too cornball today?
No. Good time listening.
Okay. Michael's in Canada, and I shouldn't say what you do for a living, should I?
No, you can say what I do for a living.
Michael's a professor of sociology, was it?
Yeah, sociology.
Yeah.
And what exactly does sociology mean?
The textbook definition is it's the study of groups and institutions.
Mm-hmm.
But it really just means looking at society and institutions and what impacts individuals. And, you know.
That's interesting. So really, what you do is your life is spent more in the categories of life.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sociologists look at things like gender and gender and social inequality and things like that. And we look for reasons for those outside of the individual. We never look, a sociologist would never look at somebody and say, well, that person's racist.
Right.
Well, that person was raised racist or got, they'd look for external factors to explain.
Right.
Most things. So.
No, I understand. So what do you champion, Michael? I mean, what do you stand for?
Prosperity and love for everybody. That's what I stand for.
Completely. That would be your statement to the world. I stand for prosperity and love.
For everybody.
I love it. And why would you take that stance? What does that mean to you?
Well, I take this stance because, I've always felt this way, but ever since I've been doing the writing, my other life, the life we're talking about tonight, as a mystic.
You're a closet mystic, right?
Closet mystic. I'm actually not a closet mystic anymore. I have come out of the closet to my colleagues.
Oh, do they know?
They know, yeah.
Okay, that's why I was reluctant.
Now you're...
That's a whole other story. Yeah, I find a lot of my colleagues are rather open to this stuff.
So yeah. Now you're a cosmic mystic, closet mystic.
I'm a closet.
Okay, good.
I mean, just so our viewers know a little bit about Michael, he's written at least 3 books, correct?
And the first one was?
Book of Life.
Yes, I'm glad you said that, because I read that book. And I got to tell you, folks, I recommend a few books now on our website. I don't make a dime. I really don't. But the Book of Life I believe I got up there on the index page. And the reason I would recommend that book is because it's that good. If you haven't read the Book of Life, and you're out there wondering, or you're in the metaphysical world, if you're not getting that book, I don't know what to tell you, because it's gonna that's a phenomenal, phenomenal book, and it would encourage people to read your other books too. That maybe that's what scares them, because it's really that good. I'd be shocked.
I like Dossier of Ascension better than the Book of Life.
No, I disagree with you.
Well,
of Life was...
You can't disagree with me, Don. You can like what you like, and I can what I like.
But remember, the dossier on it... the dossier
pardon me, Michael?
I said, I agree with you. You can like what you want.
That's right. Happen to like Dossier of Ascension.
It's good, but remember, for the new listener who just wants to build a frame of reference, that Book of Life is fabulous. The Dossier on Ascension... Really, that takes them a step further out of, you know what I mean? And for a starting point, that Book of Life's great. Yeah.
Don, you're being too positive tonight. Okay?
Why? Have you really read that book?
Of course I have.
It's excellent.
You know what? I am not going to have a discussion which book is better. That's up to anyone. I would recommend anyone could read both of them. Let's not talk about the books right now. We got Michael on the line.
That's right, we do.
The thing about Michael Sharp is that some years ago, how many years ago, Michael? I'm going to say this in my own way of saying it. I probably won't say it right. Michael found he had voices talking to him, and they were he was in a relationship with.
First they were faces. Then they became voices.
No, they were I don't think they were faces. Don, Jesus, we're not going to get through anything here if you're just making too much light of everything, because this is not...
Say that five times.
Talk, but it's also serious, okay?
Yes, I agree.
All right?
Sure.
So, Michael had voices that were coming from other dimensions, and they were communicating to him, and they were teaching him and training him and explaining things to him, which were not so far from, say, what I've been finding, is that there's a correlation between many of the people who are getting information from other dimensions. There's some correlation. It's not all the same, but on some very important points, it is the same. Like Carla Ruckert, like myself, like David Wilcock, Michael Sharp. And one of the things that's all in common is that our planet is moving to a higher dimension, and there's going to be some kind of process, and there's still some kind of, you know, not complete accordance of what that process is of ascension, where people are going to be moving through dimensions. And then everyone also agrees that there's certain negative factors that are trying to hold this back. And
well, do you agree with that?
Happening. Of course I'm going to make Michael say he agrees.
Does Michael agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm saying that pretty correct.
I hear you. And what dark forces? Just how do you define them?
Well, I'd be careful with the word dark. It's basically just people
that are.
I like to conceptualize it like there's two worlds. There's a world where it's the standard world where people go to work and
right.
They fight their battles and then they get into love and all that, and there's this whole ring of duality and conflict and strife and everything. And people, you know, they like that. If you ask somebody, they would say they like that because what else is there? You know, it makes life interesting.
Right, right.
Then there's this new world emerging, which is heaven on earth, Shambhala, prosperity for all, a much calmer existence, much more joy and life filled. And the dark forces, you know, are really just people who like that old world a lot and want to keep it that way, and there's everybody else. And it's a question of where you see yourself locating, where you see your interests are. And so often, you know, these are the very rich people, people with a lot of power, people who have a lot of stake in the old world are going to resist it a lot more than, you know, say your average Joe on the street who makes 70 or 80 grand a year or less and, you know, doesn't have a lot of stake in all that and, you know, can see a better alternative in the future. That's really all it comes down to.
Michael, how long ago, I mean, when I say you had a voice in your head, I don't mean to diminish it or make fun of it. It's a simple way of describing it. And is that an okay way to describe it, would you say?
I wouldn't call it a voice. Like, I didn't hear voices. I actually get kind of scared when I hear voices, so I know that that's possible.
You and me both, buddy. I'll tell you.
But it was... But they were voices. I mean, in sort of a metaphorical sense, they were different people's thoughts coming to me, you know, that were obviously different. And, you know, I know it sounds really weird, but it's not that weird. And your brain's set up for that kind of thing. I think I've used this example with wind before. If you just put yourself in a room with 10 people and close your eyes and let them tell you things, you know, you can't see where they're coming from, but you can hear their voice and you can feel the vibration and you know, that it's different people talking different things.
In other words, the thoughts that were coming up.
Yeah, that's right. They were thoughts.
They weren't your thoughts. They were your thoughts. Well, let's put it this way.
They were thoughts he pulled out of the ether. Of the knowledge base,
yeah.
And brought down, and
this is kind of explained. I have a new book called The Book of Light, and it's available free. And in that book, I talk a lot about the structure of consciousness and stuff.
Explain it. Explain it.
I'm looking for a way to explain how that works.
Yeah, explain it.
Yeah, that's in The Book of Light. Well, and it's hard to describe The Book of Light if you haven't read it, but basically, in The Book of Light, what I say is that we're all part of the same, I'm not the only other people who said this, but that we're all part of the same fabric of consciousness, and we're all connected, and we're all separate, but we're all together, right? And in the Book of Light, I talk about that structure and, you know, where God is and all that and different levels and where the archangels are and how consciousness is used to create the universe and where the dimensions come from. It's kind of a technical discussion of creation, but the explanation for that channeling thing and why it's possible is found in that book. But it's basically just because we're all connected. And if you're not having that experience, it's because you block it off for whatever reason. You know, either you're scared or you've got emotional difficulties or, you know, or you just don't want to do it. I mean, there's certain kinds of channeling that I just don't want to do. You know, things I don't want to be bothered with. So there's a lot of reasons why that can be blocked off. But
now, Michael, in your books, there's an incredible amount of what I would call wisdom. I can read certain things, and I just say, that's really good counsel. That really helps a person, say, overcome something inside of himself. And then there's other things in your books which are more informational, like talking about, you know, the history of Lemuria and the history of Atlantis, which are not so easily validatable as wisdom. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How did you come to the point of believing that other information was accurate? Did you cross-reference it with other people? You must have had some way.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Of taking that information and saying, I really think this is the way it is.
Yeah,
because
great question.
You know, obviously you weren't in Lemuria or Atlantis. Well, you may have, probably you were there, but you don't remember it, or I don't. I'm sure I was there. So how do you validate that
you
other
were there,
information
Wim. You
for
were.
Yourself?
When?
Yeah.
You were there.
I know I was there.
Yeah.
But I don't remember it.
Sure you do.
Okay.
There's two
ways I do that. First of all, I don't, generally, if something's coming to me, I have faith that it's the truth. And what I'm watching for when information is coming to me is just to make sure that there aren't any negative influences trying to insert stuff. You know, that's my primary concern. After it's on paper, there's two ways I validate. One is to, I don't do any cross-checking, but I do watch for, you know, I wrote the Dossier of the Ascension and wrote the Book of Life and the Book of Light now, and I just watch in the world to see if these things are confirmed, you know, and things like Lemuria hasn't been confirmed for me yet, or Atlantis, but I expect that they will be eventually. But a lot of this stuff like chakras and the power of the meditations and visualizations and, you know, the political nature of the world between, you know, old world and new world and all this other stuff, a lot of that stuff is confirmed just because I see it happening and unfolding every day and I see
mm-hmm.
it around me. The other way is there's some things that you just know that they're right. Now, I can think of the place, the homes that I grew up in or events in my childhood that I don't remember them now, you know, but if they were associated with a physical location, if I went to that physical location, I would remember, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would know I've been there before, right? Or I know I've seen that face. The human mind, the consciousness has an incredible visual power.
Mm-hmm.
Vision, images are the preferred method of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And we have such an amazing capacity, though. But, you know, you can't call up all the images or faces you've ever seen, but you would know them if you've seen them.
How did you find this capacity? I mean, when did you come into it? What happened to you that, and what age did you find this ability?
In my 40s, early 40s. I'm taking my age backward now. So. But, yeah, 3 or 4 years ago in my 40s, yeah. And before that, I wasn't
well,
really
what,
that interested.
What happened?
Before that, what, Michael?
I wasn't really that interested in any of this stuff.
And what happened that all of a sudden, 3-4 years ago, now you're writing these type of books and getting this type of communication? How? When did it? I'd really like to know the story behind that. I'm sure our audience would, too.
It occurred around the 9/11 events, you know, the destruction of the Twin Towers. That was a very archetypal event. And in the Book of Life, they talk about triggers that we've had placed in us. You know, nobody's come and injected those, but they're part of the genetic makeups of our bodies, because our bodies that genetic line has existed through certain events, right? So there's an archetypal event that some of us existed through before Lemuria, which would be associated with Two Towers or the 11/11. Anybody talks about 11/11, it's really Two Towers, right? That kind of it's a trigger event, and it has no other meaning. You know, you can look at it as deep as you want, except that it kind of flicks a switch in the brain. You know, it sends a little energy thing up through the medulla or whatever into the consciousness, which kind of sparks your crown chakra open and begins this process. So that's the high level spiritual answer of how this happened. But
do you remember the first time that it happened for you, where you have some thoughts that seemed to be not from your normal consciousness?
Yeah, well, I sat down one day and I started writing a poem, And out of this poem, which took me about four weeks to write, came the Song of Creation, which mm-hmm. is available on my website. It's a free download. It's a, it's a 30-page epic poem that talks about the chronicles, the story of creation from the beginning to the point we are now. And mm-hmm. before that, I'd never, ever written poetry. I could not string two rhymes together. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden, here it was. And it was literally pouring out of me. I mean, I would sit down and there'd be three or four pages, and then the next day there'd be another three or four pages, and then there was this whole story from beginning to end. This is the first thing I wrote before the Book of Life, which was mm-hmm. just, was remarkable. And then I finished it after I wrote the Book of Life. I kind of sat there for a while, and while I went and filled in the details with the Book of Life, but, that's when it happened, poetry. Mm-hmm. I would have never considered myself a poet, but now I do because I've written, several mystic, what I would call mystic poems. And
mm-hmm. Do you think what's happening in our world right now, like in terms of the way our government is treating the Middle East or the increased natural disasters, is completely in line with the things you were writing about?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I mean, I think
if they were to
I think it's not just your government, but several world governments around the world are anxious to create war and strife and mm-hmm. chaos to prevent this process. Right? The weather and stuff like that, I think there's a scientific cause for that, and it's global warming, but this is also being exacerbated by an increasing vibration of the planet, which is, which is going to, basically it's going to make us all, easier for us all to create, and so if we've got a lot of chaos and anger and frustration and all this other negativity in our minds, this is going to manifest in the world in one way or another, right?
Mm-hmm.
And weather is one of those ways that it can manifest.
Do you know, there was one point that was a little different between the stuff you came up with and the stuff that was in the raw material. Of course, actually, you never read the raw material, have you?
I've glanced through it. Yeah, I read it enough to know that it was there was a lot of correspondences.
Yes. In the raw material of Carla Ruckert, and she was our guest here, in the raw material, there were actually two different possibilities. This was the 1980s. One was that the planet would raise its vibrations, and there would be this 500-year cycle that it was going to be raising its vibrations to the fourth dimension. And the other was, and this is that there was going to be a division of souls, and this was going to be a sooner process, and that what they said was that there would be certain souls that would go through some kind of ascension process, and other that would be raising to this fourth dimension, and others that wanted to repeat this experience would be moved to another planet somewhere else to start over. Now, where do you sit in those two perspectives? I believe you had the point of view that everyone was going to go up.
Yeah, everyone's going up. There's
now, I'm not going to take that as fact. I'm going to say that's what you're expressing. You believe that, though, from your experiences. But I have to ask you, if everyone is going up, how does the universe grant free will to someone that wants to be controlling? Are they going to be forced to go up?
Well, okay, let me ask you this. If you're on a ship, if there's two ships, if there's small boats or whatever, and you're on the one that's sinking, and there's a bunch of people on the other one looking at you smiling and saying, jump, 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 what are you going to do? It's not a question of free will. It's a question of seeing what's going on and going, well, there's really no point in staying over here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, everybody's going to make that decision. Some people are going to do it sooner and then more and more and more. And pretty soon, it's going to be hard not to be making that decision because,
mm-hmm.
I can see people staying behind because they want, they think the old world is great, blah, 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 or
mm-hmm.
They're afraid to jump, or, they're afraid of whatever. I mean, fear is the biggest thing that keeps people from jumping over to this boat is fear. But eventually there's going to be so many people jumping that it's almost going to be a natural process.
When you see people jumping, is that jumping another word for ascension?
Yeah, well, it's a metaphor for just starting to get moving on the process.
I mean, are both groups of people going to be existing on this planet simultaneously?
Yeah.
Or is one going to leave?
No, they're absolutely. Well, people are going to leave either, and there's several reasons why people can leave. They can leave because their immortal spirit has decided that it can't fix the body, and it's just going to get more and more uncomfortable for the body as after the ascension proceeds, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. they can leave. Others are going to leave by accident, like that always happens. You know, some mm-hmm. people are just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Others are going to leave because someone else has gone off the deep end and snapped and mm-hmm. you know, hurt others. So those are the kind of things that can happen. But there isn't a process of splitting the souls off into the worthy and the unworthy. That's too much like Christian theology or you know, esoteric theology, Masonic stuff, you know, all that stuff that separates people into the, you know, the worthy and the not worthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that kind of as, that's one of the mechanisms that is used to build fear into people, because mm-hmm. then it raises questions about being worthy, whether I'm not worthy, and all this other stuff. And then you get stuck on the boat while it's sinking, and you're sitting there indecision, and then soon it's too late, or you do a lot of resisting, and you make the old boat, actually more properly, you would build the old boat up again, and then it wouldn't sink. But it's not a question of being worthy. It's a question of just kind of opening your eyes and reaching out for help, and that's really all it's
mm-hmm. Well, it's really knowing that you're worthy, and knowing you're worthy and taking the steps of that
and that's
responsibility.
That's a big thing, and that's why, you know, the message that I have is it's always a positive. You are worthy. I mean, nobody's perfect. I'm by far, you know, a perfect person. I yell at my kids. You know, I get stressed out. I let life affect me and all this other stuff. But I don't believe for a second that I'm not worthy to be mm-hmm. on a new ship. And a lot of the books I write, especially the Book of Light, is really designed to give people that the awareness that they are worthy. That, you know, I like to say around this is the book of not less than, because everybody, all the doctrines that the Christianity, all these doctrines always teach us that we're less than God, or we're less than perfect, or we're less than this or that. You know, we're less than. And the Book of Light is really about, no, we're not less than anything. We are, you know,
yeah, but how about somebody, now let me use the street lingo term. There are people in the world who we would have to say are total scumbags, okay? They murder, they manipulate, they don't care about anyone else. They, you know, they prostitute people. They do pedophilia. They don't care who they hurt. Now, how does a person like that become worthy? to go to a planet where everything is love.
Well, I mean, that requires a lot of therapy, right? But mechanisms are being put in place to deal with that, and I know around me more and more there are avenues available to help people that you described, you know. And I wouldn't call them scumbags. I would say that they're really,
I'm not judging them. I use the
No, I know, but they're really really hurt, damaged, you know,
hurt, damaged.
In pain, souls, you know. So again, you know, to think that to exclude them because of something that they didn't have control of, you know, they were probably really abused as children or whatever, it doesn't make any sense either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I had a question about the, you know, the Anunnaki and the reptilians, and how do they fit into this whole process? Are they going to ascend also? How does that work?
Everybody's going to ascend. I mean, the whole universe. Volume 2 of the Book of Light, which I haven't written yet, I'm going to talk about that ascension process, and mm-hmm. really it's going to be emphasized there that it's universal. Mm-hmm.
So you believe it's the whole universe?
Everybody. Oh, yeah, I do. And you will, too, if you read the Book of Light. You'll be able to anticipate why I say that.
Right, mm-hmm. right. It's just, I think, you mean all of physicality, basically, is ascending. If I get it right from your book, it's we've tried this process a couple times,
yeah.
And now we've got the proper amount of, let's say, yin and yang energies to really, this third attempt will be successful in the ascension of the physical, which is the entire universe, basically, correct?
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Who are the Anunnaki and the reptilians?
Okay, so I don't know anything about the reptilians, but the Anunnaki, who I'm intimately familiar with, basically were off-world colonizers. You know, you know the history of British colonization, mm-hmm. where they went to a new land and
mm-hmm.
you know, basically enslaved the people. And
so they had physical bodies here?
Oh, yeah, they had physical bodies.
Still?
Do they still have physical bodies?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're still an Anunnaki race, right, but not... I mean, you have to distinguish between...
I mean, physical bodies in our realm.
Well, and then the soul, you know, because I would say that I've lived life as an Anunnaki, but right now I'm in a human body, you know. So living a life as an Anunnaki has given me certain characteristics that which you hold with you. I mean, it's like anything, like passing consciousness. But, you know, there are people out there who are living in Anunnaki bodies right now, and there's people, and they were human before, and there's a lot more than just two races in the universe, so there's a lot of exchange that goes on. You know, you go wherever you want. You can take whatever form you want.
Mm-hmm.
Go wherever you want. So yeah, I mean, of course, the Anunnaki are going to ascend with everybody else.
Okay, Michael. We just had a call in, and they wanted to let us know that you might need to speak up. They're having a hard time hearing you.
Okay.
And they want to. You know, they want to, hey, what's Michael got to say? And then they can't hear you. So you might, yeah, just a little bit to keep the volumes up. Because Wynn naturally, he can be heard. We love you, Wynn. But your voice is coming through perfectly, and I guess mine is too, but it's your voice, Michael, that the audience has a rough time hearing.
Okay.
And you're on the same line as Wynn, so you might just have to speak up.
Have the Anunnaki been involved all the way back in Lemuria and before?
Not before Lemuria. They're basically just part of the ascension, this effort, which would be the Terran effort, I think people are calling it.
Mm-hmm.
So there would have been Lemuria and Atlantis, and then the Terran effort, which is where the Anunnaki pre-Babylonian contact, I guess it would be. I don't know anything much about the historical details, but just that it's associated with.
Before we get into that, because that's going to be, I apologize for interjecting, but I really want to know why you think that to this time will be the ascension.
I know
your reason.
You're here, right?
No, I know. I've read it. I've read your reason in your book, and I understand it completely. In fact, I agree with it. But I want you to put it in a way that why this, because I understand completely what you were stating in that book. I mean, I did. So I just wanted you to say it to the people in a short synopsis, really why this time, this third time, after we made two mistakes that we're going to do it this time.
Why do I know that?
Yes.
Well, it's because of the primarily, I guess, if there's a person out there,
because we
wondering if this is true, the question, the thing that you look for is the clarity of information. Nowhere, at no other time in the history of this planet, has the clarity of spiritual information coming through, and the accuracy of it.
Now, what makes you believe that?
What makes me believe that? Well,
I mean, when I say believe, because it's your opinion, it's what you understand. So, but
Don, you are getting tough. You've been listening to me too long.
No, but you don't understand. I agree with his synopsis.
No, I know. You know what?
I truly do. I think the reason we're going to get it right this time is because there's a whole concert of things working on our behalf this time, and the other two times. We just, you know, we either had our chakras too open or, you know what I mean? It was just, difficult to get the other two times working with the way the energies were opening and closed to us. And now you believe that we also have, don't get me wrong, but I think this is correct, that we have a host of other entities that have worked to bring about the success that we're going to have now, alien and otherwise, correct?
Right.
So really, the reason we're making it now is because of the assistance of our space family.
No.
And spirit.
He said no to that first one. So.
there's not a lot of involvement. I mean, there's a lot of help from spirit, and yeah, there is help from extraterrestrials. But
right.
Primarily, this is a task that we're doing.
Oh, so it's humanity's task. Humanity got it wrong twice, and now we're getting it right.
Well, spirit got it wrong twice, but it's.
Spirit can get
the human body that
and I know why your spirit can do it wrong, because it's trying to guide something it doesn't know the future outcome of, so it takes a probability, correct?
Well, it takes an experimental approach.
So really, spirit wasn't wise enough to get it right the first two times.
Well,
or not experienced enough. Yes,
not experienced.
Not experienced enough, because all of spirit's learning.
Well, we're always creating new conditions for learning. We never create under the same condition twice. So.
I hear sort of you, but that's pretty important to bring out of what you're trying to say, because really, in the end, you're honestly saying that we are not omniscient.
Yes, we are.
At least, or we're not aware of everything at all the times. We have a timeline, and we don't know what that is. Is that kinda? I mean, really, let's get down right down into this, the core of this one.
You need to read the Book of Light. It's a free book, and a lot of the questions that you're dealing with right now are answered in that book. We could have a much better conversation. We will have a much better conversation when you've read that, because there's a lot of concepts.
Oh, I'd love to. I've read the other two.
Oh, you'll love this one. I mean,
I think everybody should read them, because you've got some great, great information there, and it really helps. Yes, I think identify people with what you're really trying to say.
Okay, well, let me answer that other question you asked about how I know. I think I have to answer that in a dual way. There's Mike is the mystic, and Mike is a geologist, right? So Mike is the mystic, just knows. I just know because I'm here, because there's all these people doing this information because it's just right. I just know it.
Right, right.
And I have faith in that, and I have no doubt about it. And then there's Mike as a sociologist who kind of steps back and goes, well, you know. And what I do then is there's me as a sociologist isn't altogether convinced, but it's becoming more convinced every day, because more and more of the stuff is fitting together.
Right.
I mean, I've been into the biomedical research in the last couple of weeks, finding out that medical doctors are doing experiments on telepathy now. They're putting people in isolated rooms and using the MRI to measure quantum effects at a distance,
sure,
or whatever. You know, somebody's connected to somebody else when they're not connected physically. And that's a major paradigm-busting experiment.
Oh, yeah. In fact, there's a lot of things now. Exactly. You're right on. And there's a shift going on.
Michael, how does all this connect with Jesus?
Oh, well...
I'll give you an easy question.
Jesus, this would have been, Jesus would have been...
We're giving you hard questions. That was a tough
really
one, too.
Really hard questions, yeah. Jesus would have been one of those people who came at a time in the earth when somebody needed to come to lift the vibration a little bit, because it was going... Because it's getting too far. There's a real danger, you know, because we all work it through beneath a veil. You know, while we're working on this ascension process, we're not aware of who we are. It's like we're walking around with visors over our eyes, or blinders,
or sunglasses.
It's like giving children power toys and firing them up. You know, there's a lot of bad things that can happen. Things can get out of hand.
Yeah.
And so that was at a time when things were kind of spiraling into darkness, and you know, getting violent and all this other stuff. And so Jesus was one of the ones that came, and this happened several times, who came and taught the truth about things. He kind of reminded everybody. He wasn't trying to wake everybody up at that time, but he's trying to remind everybody kind of subtly that this was what it's really about, and, you know, just
question for you.
Keep love going and all this other stuff. And so, you know, and he came and talked about the ascension because he knew it was going to happen. He was working in full awareness.
Yeah.
Question.
Where does he come from? Now, one real quick
question.
You get
one and I get one.
Oh, okay.
This is yours.
And then I get one and then you get one.
That's right.
Well, Jesus, he came from the angelic realm, right?
Well, what do you mean by angelic
realm?
Jesus, the monad, is a spark of consciousness just like everybody else.
Right. But some people explain it like there's this angelic realm that started out of creation. And then the rest they started to break out into universes, and then, you know, the logos took over various orders, and then there became sub-logos. You believe that, correct?
That's explained it. I get a little anxious around it when hierarchy starts to be brought in. But in the Book of Light, I talk about that.
Right.
I wouldn't use the angelic realms. I would use a certain level in the unfolding to describe it.
Like what level?
Well, like one of the top levels were what I would consider the, you know, the angelic realm. But I wouldn't say that that's any different than the lower levels.
How many levels are there, though?
Well, there's 12.
That's what I remember.
Including God, the God level, there would be 13 levels.
Now, a lot of people don't believe that. a lot of people believe there's eight, right?
You know what?
And then there's an octave or a folding.
It's like if you have a pie, you can divide it into eight slices or 12 right. slices. It's really different ways of slicing the same pie.
I'm a musician, so I take my metaphor from the piano keyboard.
Yeah.
One octave is 12 notes, and then there's a key, a creative scale, a flavor that you could use to create with is then a selection of those 12 notes. But 12, you know, it's one of those numbers. So
you don't necessarily say it's the octave range, right?
Well, I wouldn't say, no, I would take that metaphor too far. Just that, you know, there's 12 levels, so I kind of, you know, 12.
12 levels.
You know, I've heard it described as there's eight, without the sharps and flats, there's eight levels, okay? And the sharps and flats, you know.
Is that why they call him Michael Sharp?
That's because he...
a key is only sharp or flat in relation to the key. Like a note is only sharp or flat
right.
in relation to a key, right? So,
right.
You're really, what you're doing is you're bringing in the other five notes into the equation.
Well, and then I wouldn't take the metaphor too far now, right?
I'm just kidding you, Michael. No, I understand completely, and in fact, you know, the book of light. When you really get into it, you address some of the issues of what the apocalypse is.
Hey Don, it's my turn for a question.
Oh right, sorry.
Thank you. I have to clear my space here. Michael, I wanted to ask you, why did Jesus say?
That's a personal question. I object.
Why did Jesus? I'm just asking this because I want to know why the shift at the time of Jesus. If we're to believe what, you know, the quotes in the Bible, which of course anyone can say maybe that's not what he said, but if in fact he did say these things, he said things like one will be taken, one will be left behind, new heaven, new earth. When he said one will be taken, one will be left behind, that seemed to imply a division, and yet you're saying that it's actually not going to be a division.
Will it only be a division in the mind?
Well, I mean, first of all, we got to remember that the Bible has been edited. You know, it's mm-hmm. gone through several major Roman Catholic in the Vatican editing, mm-hmm. right?
So maybe that's not the right.
Yeah, I would have to say.
Well, I think it's
not
true. I think there's truth in that statement that there is a sense where, I mean, I would consider myself, you know, in another world compared to a lot of the people on my block right now,
mm-hmm.
Existing with a lot less stress and a lot less of the BS that they have put up with.
Mm-hmm.
I would consider myself, you know, taken to the other side. But that doesn't mean that these people are gonna be stuck in this world forever. You know, as soon as they wake up, they're welcome to come over.
Mm-hmm.
But you can take that basic truth and you can fit words around it and you can make it into something that's scary. And, you know, that it becomes, you know, those statements by Jesus become something that strike fear in people. And that's mm-hmm. one of the ways that ascension has been prevented in the past. It's to allow this fear to be invoked, right? Fear is an ascension mm-hmm. stopper, right? If you're afraid of something, you don't move.
So maybe what it means is that some people will go now and the rest will go at some future time.
That's true. Some people are going now and some people are going to out of the book of life.
Yeah.
There will be waves of activation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there isn't any sense where there has to be any kind of death or destruction associated with this. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if all of a sudden, you know, the political leaders of the world stop being manipulated by the people who manipulate them and woke up and said, oh, you know, this has all got to change, you know, it would all change. The wars would stop and blah, 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 blah,
mm-hmm.
and that would be the end of it. So, you know, it's people buying into that it's got to be this way myth that create the conditions where, you know, it may be that way.
Into the isms.
I'm here to say that it's not going to be that way, despite what mm-hmm. they want. It's going to end relatively soon.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to give us a timeline, let's say events that will unfold over the next year, 2 years, and 4 years, what would that be? What you can see?
Well, you know, I can only speak in generalities here. There's going to be an increasing amount of light in the world, and you're going to see that everywhere. You're going to see it in medicine. You're going to see it in universities. You're going to see it in your home life. You're going to see it in school. You're going to see it in the media. More and more, the truth of everything is going to be coming out. And, you know, at some point, I would say around the year 2012, there's going to be a kind of shift to where everybody kind of recognizes that something's up, right? And their understanding of that's going to be different depending on where they are in the past, but everybody's going to know, even, you know, the scumbags out in the street who are still hurting people, they're going to know at that point.
Don't use that word, Michael. No scumbags.
Right, but everybody's going to know at that point.
Yeah.
And at that point, there's also going to be a lot of structure in place and a lot of help and a lot of books and a lot of people talking, so that it's going to be easier. So, you know, 2012 is kind of the shift point where the old world really starts to just collapse after that, right? Up until then, we're still in this struggle with these old structures. But, you know, the more we unplug and the more we visualize new structures, the less problem we'll have with those.
Do you think, you know...
So that's a lot to happen very soon.
It's obvious that, there's a lot of negative going on in terms of politics and war. And I know it's not good to focus on that, but I've heard people say that the extraterrestrials are stopping things from happening, that like a nuclear bomb from going off. Some people have had that point of view, because obviously there would seem to be many people right now who would like that to happen. There's certainly a lot of hate directed at the United States from...
I think there's people out there actually trying to make that happen.
Yeah.
Manipulating the political situation so that one country or another, you know, develops something. One country that's easy to manipulate does something, you know. And I can see that's the direction they're going in. You know, it's the same kind of thing that happened in World War II.
But do you think there's intervention happening right now that's stopping that? Or do you think it could still possibly happen?
Yeah, it can. It actually can still help, and I don't believe that the ETs are involved at that level, because it's very important that we do this ourselves, that we don't that we aren't handheld through this process, because the process of, you know, growing and learning requires going through these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if all of a sudden the ships all appeared in the air and they said we're here, here's your new world government, this is where you're going to do it, we basically are just taking on we're repeating a past.
We're just taking on another savior.
Well, that's right. And that's really not what the point of this is. It's to come into our own power and awareness of our own humanity.
Yeah, well, what we've done is we've just muddled the ride again. We start, a lot of this information that says it's going to happen now, here, now, then, soon. These people are really... You know, people are expecting it and expecting and expecting and expecting and expecting and expecting and expecting, and then by the time they just figure, you know, this is a little ridiculous. You know what I mean? So really, this gives it a long enough period where they're, you know, people, there's a few more years that people got to go through some rough stuff.
And there's a lot of work to be done.
Now, you see, as I see it, if a nuclear weapon should actually go off, that's going to have two potential effects, and that's going to be a very key thing in terms of what happens, because either people are going to rally together to say, we never want this to happen again, or people are going to start hating each other and saying, let's get them before they get us.
You're presenting that like it's a good thing. You know, there's a possible silver lining there.
That's not a good thing. That second thing is not a good thing. Not at all.
This thing's not a good thing either. I mean, that whole thing's not... We don't want that to happen.
Well, we don't want it to happen. But, if there's... Now, personally...
Oh, when you think it'd be exciting.
No, I don't. Personally, I feel... And this is some of the answers to my questions, Michael. And, you know, I'm not... Like I say, I don't know what's true and what isn't. I ask questions, you know, I have my own channeling experience. And supposedly, from the questions to the answers to some of my questions, is that if there's a predisposition for the people of the common man for peace and love, that allows enough permission for intervention from other sources to prevent certain things from happening. Because if just the power structures cause those things to happen, it does violate the free will of the common man if he doesn't want them to happen. You follow what I'm saying?
So, but our free will is violated all the time on this earth.
Well, I know that.
Now, I'm going to have to interject on that note because we've got under a minute and a half, and you probably want to close with the calling in the light.
Michael, do you want to say anything before?
Well, I'd be real careful about anything that separates people. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
that's duality. That's the textbook definition. That's my textbook definition of duality. Us and them. You know, the worthy and the unworthy, the people who have a predisposition to good and the people who don't. You know, that's all very, I've heard it before kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get that's exclusionary and that's not what I'm here to talk. That's not my message. That's not what I believe. I
mm-hmm.
believe that everybody's here. Everybody's going through the same process. And everybody, bar some unfortunate incident or some nut job, you know, pushing a red button and blowing up an entire country, everybody's going to make it.
People are taking you seriously, aren't they, Michael?
This ascension stuff.
A lot of people.
Well, they see it in their own lives, especially when you get into things like the dossier and you start doing chakra meditations and
mm-hmm.
stuff. And
mm-hmm.
you start to see the impact.
We've got. I would love. You know what, Michael? I loved having you on the program, and I know there's so much more to say, and I'd love to have you back on and bring you back on the air. I just think your books are fantastic. I know. I mean, I loved it. Your first book and your second book I read, and that was fabulous. Your first book, I encourage everybody to go out and read. And with this new book of light, I'm looking forward to reading that one. And I must say thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Wynn, thank you. We're out of time.
Are we going to call in the light?
Well, we don't have the time. And everybody's, you know, got to be off the air.
Will be our first show. We didn't do it.
Yep.
I'll do it for 30 seconds.
All right.
Okay. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the light to surround and protect each person that's listening, that any negativity be taken to the higher realms of light. We just see that energy radiating from the center of the galaxy through each of us, and that each of us has the intention to connect with the oneness of all of us and the oneness of the cosmos and act and I've never done this so fast. And allow those forces that are service to others to help us help ourselves.
Well, thank you, Wynn. Thank you.
Okay.
And I love you, Wynn. And I appreciate this, folks. We're off the air. You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogginservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program. And we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.